Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, flowery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yinhu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 4, Tea and Empathy, September 5th, 2013. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Silver Lake Tea House. Show notes for this episode are located on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. I hope you will consider liking the show's Facebook page or joining the Yarns at Yinhu group on Ravelry. You can find me on Ravelry and Twitter as Sarah Pomegranate. I welcome your suggestions and comments. This week, I heard from new listeners Through the Loops, Amy Bernhardt, Boutros Babe, Spinner's End Farm, and Beezy Bee. Sherry from Spinner's End Farm left the following reply to episode 2. I listened to this podcast while making balls of roving from Shetland and alpaca from our farm. It was very soothing listening to your voice and having the silky fibers running through my hands. I can totally relate to your comment about it being gratifying to make something and have something to show for your efforts. My career is similar to yours in that we don't see the outcomes of our actions until much later, if within our lifetime. And I believe fiber arts keep us grounded and feeling productive. Your mom sounds like a goddess. Thank you so much, Sherry. We have a plan for a special segment in a later episode, so stay tuned for more news from Spinner's End Farm. Today's episode features segments titled Backstory, A Little Bit of Learning, Ever-Expanding Skill Set, and Gratitude Journal. This week on Backstory, I'd like to talk a little bit about teaching and learning. Since it's back to school time and I am an educator, I thought it would be a good time to address the importance of learning for teachers. I think, and I don't know if this is something controversial or not, but I've held this belief for quite a while as an educator. It's more important for an educator to know how to learn than how to teach. If someone becomes accustomed to learning, I feel that they can turn that empathy into a pronounced ability to teach others. And I think it's important to have an empathetic stance as an educator. As a member of the National Writing Project, I've done a lot of thinking and a lot of reading on this subject. Someone who I feel addresses it very well is Natalie Goldberg. Her most well-known work is Writing Down the Bones, and in it she writes, "When I teach a beginning writing class, it is good. I have to come back to beginner's mind, the first way I thought about writing. There is no security, no assurance that because I wrote something good 2 months ago, I could do it again." I really like that passage from Natalie Goldberg, and it's something I try to keep in mind when instructing others. Once we develop mastery over something, it's very easy to lose perspective. And that's why I think continuing to learn and engage in the process of learning is one of the important things we can do as educators to stay fresh and stay effective. Lots of educators take college classes and continue pursuing their formal education. But I don't think it's necessary to pursue your formal education in order to get this benefit. I think you could learn almost anything. That's why it was so exciting to me, even though I procrastinated and initially I wasn't interested at all in taking a class called Crochet for Stress Relief. I began to see a lot of benefit in doing that once I began. There I was with all of my colleagues. Very few of us knew how to crochet or had ever tried it at all. We're grown women, professionals in our field, And here we are engaging in these behaviors, much like our students do. We felt frustrated. We felt like we were trying to learn a lot of different things at once, not just the tactile skills of handling the yarn and handling the crochet hook, but how to read a pattern. We had to proceed by trial and error. We had to listen to sets of directions. We had to ask the teacher to repeat herself. We had to fight back those feelings of pride that sometimes get in the way of our own learning. Our ego sometimes gets in the way of our own learning. And we had to tamp that down and suppress that and be humble in order to progress with the skill and learn something. I think it's interesting for an educator to participate in a learning experience too, just as a way to examine all of the kinds of learners and how they experience the same instruction differently. Some people were very interested in watching our instructor. She used a camera that projected a large image of what she was doing on the wall in our faculty room. Some people liked to watch her over and over try it and then try it themselves. Some people were tied to sets of paper directions. Some people liked to try doing what she had just taught us with someone more experienced sitting right next to them telling them if they were doing the right thing. Some people liked a lot of oversight from the instructor, and some people just wanted to be left alone to fight it through and figure it out on their own and then ask a question only later, only after they had done trial and error many times. Seeing all of these different kinds of learners participate in the same experience was a great way to get some perspective. The learning process is fraught with challenges and frustrations. I think a lot of times as educators, we would like to believe that if we just have all of the right strategies, if we have all the right instructional guides, it will be easy. And if it's not easy, there's something we are doing wrong. But in fact, the process of learning is wonderfully agonizing and difficult. And usually it's only the very agonizing and difficult things in life that are really worth putting a lot of energy into in the first place. Teaching is definitely worth it, and engaging in activities that help us cultivate that sense of beginner's mind and that capacity for empathy are very important, I believe, for educators. There's another reason to continue to learn new things and engage as a learner, and that brings me to this week's segment, A Little Bit of Learning. And as I mentioned in the last episode, A Little Bit of Learning is often misquoted from Alexander Pope as a little bit of knowledge, but it is a little bit of learning. And this week, our little bit of learning is about maintaining a healthy brain. I've been reading a little bit of Reader's Digest top 10 tips for maintaining a healthy brain. Light reading, not exhaustive research, but like we said, this is a little bit of learning, not a lot of learning. According to the resources that I've been reviewing, one of the most important things that we can do to maintain brain health is to engage in the complex and the novel. And what that does when you're learning something new and learning something relatively complex with many components or parts is that it promotes synaptic density. Synaptic density, in turn, decreases the likelihood of neurodegenerative diseases. Alvaro Fernandez of Sharp Brains is someone who researches this idea of neuroplasticity. It's the ability for our brains to change and rewire themselves in response to experience and learning. He says that neuroplasticity is observed mostly in brains of those who have become an expert at something. And all of that learning, engaging in the complex and the novel, results in a plasticity of mind. And so the brain is able to rewire itself and take on new information successfully and develop that kind of synaptic density that wards off degenerative disease in the brain. He says that it's not enough to continue doing something that you already know how to do, but to continue to adapt and incorporate what's new and novel into the level of skill that you've already acquired. If you're an expert, this becomes increasingly challenging. And that's why it's important for even expert people in their field to engage in experiences that are completely new to them, something where they have no sense of expertise, they have no sense of security that they will do well. And so they need to turn on all of those other parts of their brain in order to do the learning. In the Reader's Digest Top 10 Tips for Preserving Brain Health and Maintaining a Healthy Brain, there were two other items that I thought particularly applied to knitters and people who are involved in the practical arts. Number 3 was socialization, and I thought about the amount of time people spend socializing with folks who are expert in the same kinds of things that they're expert in, and how easy it is to socialize over things like knitting and other kinds of handicrafts. And the 5th thing was to slow down and appreciate silence. I think that's something we can all cultivate. And I think there's a part of ourselves when we are fully engaged in the practical arts that really becomes slow and quiet and appreciative of the silent kind of life. It aids concentration, and I think it replenishes us. Certainly, this is going to be more appealing to introverts than to extroverts who like the socialization part of it more. But slowing down and enjoying silence and quiet reflection is one of the 10 tips for maintaining brain health. For the ever-expanding skill set this week, I thought I'd talk a little bit about my practice of making kombucha, which I have failed at previously but managed to bring to my own level of satisfaction this summer. I received the gift of a SCOBY from my friend Gwen from the National Writing Project at an event we had in June. It was a little baby SCOBY in a small quart jar, and it's since grown to quite large proportions, and it's actually had a few babies. One is living with Christy. I brought it to her when we did some pickle canning last week. And the one that I have in my kitchen could actually be separated a few more times. If I find some larger jars, I might do that. Kombucha is fermented black tea, and it's been very popular lately for its probiotic properties. In telling you about kombucha, I want to give a big disclaimer that I am not making any claims about health benefits or trying to convince anyone that they should be drinking kombucha. It's completely a personal choice. Some people are a little bit grossed out by the whole idea, and some people are really big fans. SCOBY, as I mentioned in my first podcast episode, stands for Symbiotic Colony of Bacteria and Yeast, and that is what ferments the sugar in the tea. I have not measured the kombucha I'm making for any alcohol content. My guess is that there is a trace amount of alcohol content in the kombucha. Kombucha is sold commercially in grocery stores where alcoholic beverages are not sold, so I don't think the alcohol content is incredibly high, but it does have that effervescence and foaminess that you might associate with a light beer or a hard cider. Here are the steps I use to make a new batch of kombucha this week. I will accompany this portion of the audio podcast with a tutorial, including photographs, on the blog that accompanies each episode. First, I poured off the kombucha that had been fermenting in the jar for about 2 weeks, and I strained the liquid and placed it in swing top glass bottles. Always leave some of the kombucha in the glass with the SCOBY, or else the SCOBY starts to dry out. That leftover kombucha also helps the fermenting process of the new tea that you put in. It's important to remember that kombucha should be made and stored in food-grade glass vessels. You shouldn't use any kind of glass that's purely decorative, glass that might be used to make a vase or something of some other household item. It needs to be food-grade glass, and this is where some claims have been made about kombucha making people really sick. If there's lead in the glass, the fermenting process can actually leach some of that lead out of the glass container, and then you're drinking that. It can really be a health risk, so make sure you have food-grade glass. Also, as I said, those swing top bottles are excellent because they can keep in the effervescence in the kombucha, and that also allows you to store containers on their sides in the refrigerator, which is handy. So after straining off all of the kombucha that's ready to drink, I chill that, and then I make a strong black tea using about a gallon of filtered water brought to a boil, and then I dissolve about 3/4 cup of sugar and use the equivalent of 6 tea bags of plain black tea. This week I used black tea leaves that I bought bulk from Spices and Teas. I visited Chelsea Market in New York City this weekend and bought some bulk tea leaves. And I haven't tried this resulting kombucha yet, but that's what I was using in the series of photographs I took for the blog. And I used approximately 8 tablespoons of black tea. And with the sugar and with the tea, you can use more or less depending on your taste and depending on the results you like. I let that steep, the tea leaves steep, for about 5 minutes, and then strained all of the tea out of the liquid and let the liquid cool completely. Putting hot liquid into the jar with the SCOBY will definitely damage or kill the SCOBY, so everything has to be room temperature before putting it back in the jar. Once the new tea is cool, I pour it into the fermenting container and cover it with cheesecloth and store it in a cool, dark place. Anywhere from 10 days to 2 weeks creates the kombucha consistency that I like. What sometimes when I pour the new tea into the container with the SCOBY at the bottom, the SCOBY will flip over or get turned on its side, and I just reach in with very clean hands and turn the SCOBY right side up. The smooth white side of the SCOBY is the one that should be facing up, and the more gelatinous side should be underneath. Sometimes during fermentation, a new SCOBY will form at the bottom of the fermenting jar, and sometimes another layer of the SCOBY will form directly underneath the SCOBY itself, and they become fused together more or less. When the SCOBY has several layers, with impeccably clean hands, you can just peel apart the SCOBY and use the half that you've taken off to start a new batch or give to a friend. Well, those are my recommendations for making a great kombucha. I've been working on it for a couple of months, and I've been enjoying a refreshing glass of kombucha almost every day. In fact, I have one with me right now as I'm podcasting. I am very interested in hearing about your experience with kombucha if you've been making it, or about any tips or suggestions you can offer. I've heard about some folks infusing fruit or fruit flavors into their kombucha. That's something I have not experimented with up to this time, and I'd love to hear from you if you have some experience doing that, or if you have a great recipe you'd like to share. Gratitude Journal. This week, I'd like to take this special opportunity to thank some of my teachers in the fiber arts. I'd like to thank Nisha, who taught me how to crochet, Betty, who taught me how to spin, Kristen Kapoor, who taught me how to make my first shawl and how to use the garter tab cast-on method, Joanne at Mountain Knits and Purls, who taught me many things, but specifically how to knit with two colors at the same time, and finally, my mother, Kathleen, who tried but was not successful in teaching me how to sew when I was a teenager. I know the basics, but I never became a skilled seamstress like she did. My mother, however, taught me how to learn, and she taught me how to be humble in the presence of someone who really knew their stuff. And I think that humility is very important if you're going to be able to take on the skills that someone else is showing you. You have to set aside your ego in order to learn. Today's quote is from Paulo Coelho. What is a teacher? I'll tell you. It isn't someone who teaches something, but someone who inspires the student to give her best in order to discover what she already knows. Thank you for listening. The music in today's episode is Sweet, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Jump a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature.